into paper six. Far away.
So this is agenda paper six. This issue is about how to account for the purchase of a right to use land. The committee discussed this issue twice in March and May this year. In summary, the committee identified the characteristics of a lease in this transaction, but tentatively decided not to take this issue to its agenda because the fact pattern is specific to a jurisdiction. The committee received four comment letters to the tentative agenda decision. Two of them supported the committee's decision, and one respondent also agrees with the committee's view. However, they think the agenda decision should not include a specific view on this issue. The fourth comment letter was from the submitter of this issue, and they clarified some fact patterns in the comment letter. Considering the new information contained in the clarification, and also the fact there is a local gap interpretation in the submitter jurisdiction, we have made analysis one more time by comparing two views based on the clarified fact patterns. In conclusion, we think the characteristics of a lease can be still found. We think that clarification by the submitter leads to a switch of a lessor in this transaction. And although this issue does not meet the criterion, the issue is widespread and practical relevance. In the March outreach, four respondents answered they have a similar legal framework in their jurisdiction. But we think the existence of different accounting treatments in those jurisdictions does not necessarily mean there is diversity in practice. In addition, the submitter also made their own outreach, and they now think the fact pattern in their jurisdiction is unique. One respondent suggested that the agenda decision should not include committee's specific view on this issue. However, we think the direction by the ISB to the committee and supported by the trustee is the opposite. So in conclusion, we recommend the committee should reaffirm its decision not to take this issue to its agenda and should not change the wording to the tentative agenda decision. Do you agree?
Before I bring Laurence in, Kazu, you've been speaking with the submitter.
Yes.
My recollection is the submitter is perfectly happy to be identified on this one.
Yes.
So by doing this, do we leave unresolved for Rosita and her team anything, or do we deal with what they believe they need to deal with? I'm not asking whether or not they agree or whether or not they are happy. Does this meet the need that drove them to submit the issue to us? Have they reached that conclusion?
I had a conversation with them actually before posting a paper, and they agree with the conclusion this is specific to a jurisdiction. And then the committee not to take this to agenda. That's what they agree. But what they don't like is to describe the characteristic of a lease. I mean, that may affect their current practice.
Well, that I understand, but okay. Laurence?
Yeah, I'm not so far from the questions you were asking, because I was asking why is this all four? Because we know the fact pattern is very specific. I understand that locally they would like to treat as land so that they don't amortize. If we go along the route we are going to say it's a lease, I suppose that it's easy to demonstrate it's a finance lease, and we are concluding that you can have a lease with indefinite term. I suppose that the next question, which we have not answered, is if you have a finance lease with indefinite term, so when you recognize the assets, can you have a non-depreciable asset? Because I think that if we get there, then it would solve some concerns of our submitter.
We say that.
But do we say so? And are we agreeing to the fact that you can have, under a finance lease, an asset that you do not amortize?
That was my recollection from our previous discussion.
Yes, because we say in here that the committee noted that useful life for depreciation purposes might include renewal periods, and that judgment would be needed in applying need to be applied in making this assessment. Yes.
Yep.
Yes. The committee further noted the lease could be indefinite with extensions or renewals.
Okay. So you imply that. You imply that you can have no amortization.
Mm-hmm.
Then I do not understand what is so important for the qualification as a finance lease with no depreciation versus qualification as PP&E under IS 16 of a non-depreciable asset.
Because this is requiring you to make that judgment. If you are saying that it has the characteristics of a lease, then you're required to make the judgment to determine whether or not you have got an indefinite useful life.
And I think that was, I would agree with Michael in my conversations with the chairman of the Indonesian board. One of their concerns was that people would say, you can't make that judgment about renewals because this system hasn't been around long enough. And so somebody, usually an auditor, would say, no, you have to assume 25 years and amortize over that. And they had some friction locally over that issue. And we're essentially saying that's a judgment you have to make. We're not going to make it for you. And so that is a frustration, I think, they have. Scott and then John.
I'm intrigued by the comment that this system hasn't been around for that long. What was in place before this system? How could companies gain the right to use land? Previously, were companies allowed to own land? I assume that the system we're talking about is this methodology where the government acts, you know, as the landowner, but conveys the right to use it to the company.
The answer to the question is we don't know what the proceeding, we over here don't know, but we do know that the existing model
mm-hmm.
that involves these particular terms and the renewal periods and whether or not the renewal is substantive is all the result of a law that has been around for 25, 30 years, in my understanding.
Okay, so it's not real new.
The answer is we don't know. We literally don't know what preceded it.
Okay.
John, and then Kaz.
I mean, it seems to me that the thing that this agenda decision doesn't deal with is the issue about whether it's important whether the lessee has the right to renew, or whether the renewal is something that's probable at the option of the lessor. It seems to me that assuming that there's an indefinite life to the land use right is only appropriate if the lessee has a series of renewal options that go indefinitely into the future. If the lessee has no right, and that right actually terminates after 50 years, but there's a possibility, or even a probability, that the government will extend the period of the lease, you'd have to question whether it's appropriate that the amortization, that the asset be treated as an indefinite life asset. So we talk here about the possibility that with the renewal period you could have an indefinite life lease, and I agree with that, but what the agenda rejection doesn't deal with is whether those renewals need to be at the option of the lessee or at the option of the lessor, or whether it's okay if they're at the option of the lessor. Now, my understanding of the fact pattern we're dealing with in this jurisdiction is the lessee has no rights after the first period of renewal, and it, whether they actually get to extend their land use right is entirely at the option and will of the state.
You're the bench. That's an interesting read of it. I would have, my understanding of it was that the state had very few rights that, while it could theoretically exercise them, practical implications of the state saying you can no longer operate a hotel on this corner, such that it would almost be an expropriation.
I mean, my understanding and is that, my understanding from reading the papers is that the state can step in at any time and take the land, and they have to recompense you for the fair value of whatever you've constructed, with the right you have, or what the right to build, or the right to cultivate. But at the end of the first extension period, there is no obligation upon them to compensate you for now. No one knows. My understanding is no one knows what's going to happen when you get to that point in time, and people believe that the probability is very, very high that the government will roll over and renew these rights. But whether it seems to me important in assessing if it's an indefinite life asset, it seems to me to be important. If the lessee has no option to continue to renew a lease indefinitely, it seems to me that's not an indefinite life, an indefinite life right of use asset.
Noted. Kaz?
I think this is the issue, how ISB or how IFRIC deal with the local jurisdiction specifically. So I understand that the majority of the members take the characteristics of the lease based on the given fact patterns. But at the same time, I think we see the characteristic of land as Indonesian interpretation provide. So the more we go into the detail, there might be some different interpretation. And the most knowledgeable local jurisdiction standard setter interpret it as a land. And we, well, actually I personally don't be able to, I'm not be able to disagree with that view based on the given fact patterns or information we get. It is very difficult to challenge those, and I think we shouldn't deal with that local specific issue. That's why the conclusion is jurisdiction specific. We don't get the agenda. Understanding we, given that certain fact pattern, we see the characteristics of lease, we don't deal with. That means whatever in the local, not just the local preparers have owned the land, follow the Indonesian guidance, but whoever the foreign companies invest in the land should consult with the guidance in Indonesia. I think that is the most efficient way to deal with this. So in that sense, I think I agree with the conclusion, but I personally don't like this wordings. We don't need to write up this issue. It's more like a lease characteristic, lease specific, but at the end, it is jurisdiction specific. So we might, I think I prefer write up some more for that positive view for the land or local interpretation. No. But this may be the best way we can do at the current information given.
I take your point, Cass, but there are a couple of alternative points. One is that we were asked by this jurisdiction for an opinion, and we reached one. Wasn't the one I would have preferred, but the committee supported it. So to now say, well, we reached a conclusion, but we're not going to tell you what it was, doesn't help matters any. The other is, as more emerging economies start using our standards, we're going to get more like this. and there's going to be more of this stuff, and the trustees have said, you guys got to deal with it. So I understand your point and the ASPJ's point and their comment, but I don't think we can go there. It's my personal view as we can. Let's say Scott, Joanna, Lawrence, and then let's wrap it.
It seems to me that concluding that this is land, or concluding that it is a leased asset with an indefinite life, both of those conclusions would rely on essentially concluding that the government's rights are non-substantive.
Yeah.
That might be true. The government's rights might be non-substantive, and I think people in Indonesia are in a better position to tell us whether those rights are non-substantive or not. I'm certainly not going to tell the Indonesian government that their rights are non-substantive.
Not if you want to go to Indonesia.
Yeah. So, I mean, but we could write this agenda decision differently if we wanted to say maybe it's land, maybe it's a lease. In order to be land, however, you'd have to conclude that the government's rights are non-substantive. And if you made that conclusion, then even if you thought it was a lease, you'd probably conclude it was an indefinite life. So your accounting doesn't necessarily depend on whether you think it's land or a lease. Your accounting depends upon whether you think the government's rights are substantive. I mean, that could be another way to get to the same point, because I think the substance of those rights is what keeps us from being comfortable enough to call it land. And as John points out, if those government rights are substantive, then maybe they stop you from calling it an indefinite life lease as well. So we could focus the agenda decision on the substantive rights. If they're substantive, then you may have a problem with not amortizing this thing. If they're not, then you probably don't amortize it, whether you think it's land or a lease.
Kaz, would Scott's approach respond to your concerns? Okay. Fei Long, Joanna, Lawrence, and then let's wrap it.
I'm assuming that the ownership of the land has been transferred to the government, right? Because the ownership of the land no longer belongs to the private who owns the land before. And if we assume that it's correct, I think we can deem that as kind of a lease instead of other ways. But if lease, I would say in the agenda decision wording in the fourth paragraph, we can still be able to use the use of a life for depreciation. We might have better to use the lease term to replace the use for life. I'm not sure. If lease will be probably best way to use the lease term instead of use for life.
Oh, you mean a
lease term instead of use for life?
Yeah.
Probably right.
Probably right. Yeah, I take your point. Joanna, Lawrence, and Julie wanted to get into.
I'm concerned that we seem to be revisiting the technical conclusions that we reached, and we are trying to, and I will say, pander to a particular jurisdiction around the wording that we use. I think that we've got to be strong, and if you like, this is a test. As Wayne said, they brought it to us. We reached a conclusion. We have put it in an agenda decision, tentative agenda decision. Yes, we had some feedback on that, but basically people, the feedback was generally supportive of what we had. So I think that we shouldn't be trying to play with what we've got here, and I absolutely agree with what Wayne said in terms of how we say it. We can't, you know, have an answer and then not tell people that that was the answer we reached. I think John's concern or comment around the indefinite life, et cetera, I think that in the tentative or the agenda decision that we're talking about here, I think we have given and we've made it very, very clear that judgment needs to be used around that. And the sort of things that John was talking about was the additional bits of judgment that you would use around that to determine whether or not you had. So to me, we should absolutely be supporting what we have written here. And the only potential thing that I might add to it is in the second to last paragraph right at the end, where we say we noted the particular fact pattern is specific to a jurisdiction and subject to judgment. So to emphasize again that it's a judgment issue, but I mean, that's just to, because I think we've got to be very, very careful that we are not, and I will use this term, prostituting ourselves, that
you
we
find
need
more loaded words.
Sorry, I will take those words back. That we need to be very, very clear around what we are doing and why we're doing it.
I'm going to start building a list of words we shouldn't use.
Sorry.
I'll put my helping in too. Joanna does raise one valid point. My recollection of our last conversation was that the decision of the committee was overwhelmingly that this was a lease, and that the only question was whether the renewal terms were substantive. So adding the additional, you might decide it, completely different answer would be changing the decision that we reached last time. That I don't think that counts as pandering, but it is revisiting the technical discussion. Laurence?
Still, compared to our previous discussion, there has been a change in the fact pattern. And the change in the fact pattern is that we learned that if nobody wants the land, if the government does not want the land for public interests, and the current user does not want the land, then the land does not revert to the tribe to which a payment has been made. And the state is just administrating the land, trying to find someone to pick up that land. So this changing fact pattern, to me, raises a couple of questions, or made me say this is really a weird fact pattern, and can we be so affirmative about the fact that it is a lease? Initially, we were saying it's a lease from the original tribe, where the lesser were the original tribes. Now, in this document, we say, no, the lessor is the state. But how do we demonstrate that the lessor is the state? Well, to respond to the definition of a lease, it's a series of payments for right of use, for the right to use an asset. But here, the series of payments, there is a one payment up front. To whom? To the previous tribe or owners. It's not going to the state. There are minimal fees, administration fees paid to the state. Effectively, the state can kick out the user of the land at the end of the decided term and use it for interest purposes. But if it's not for interest purposes and cannot demonstrate for it's for the public interest, who controls the residual value of the land at the end of the lease term? Can I say it's the state? Who does control? I don't know. Who controls the residual value at the end of the lease term? I will need that to identify the lessor. So I see some of the concerns to be so affirmative that we are in front of a lease over here. And it's why I was trying to see beyond that question, whether it's a lease or not a lease, what's really at stake.
Julie, and then Bernd.
My comment just relates to a point I didn't see in the paper. Maybe it was discussed, but in case it wasn't. And that relates to the basic question, which is, should these transactions be accounted for in IAS 16 to begin with, which seemed to be the opening comment or input from the submitter. And I just wanted to point out that, I mean, the definition of property, plant, and equipment in IAS 16, which really sets the scope, it says they're tangible items that, you know, you use in production. I mean, the word tangible is there for a reason, is distinguished from intangible. Here, everything is about the right, you know, and intangible. So to me, regardless of what the accounting model, the best accounting model should be, that in and of itself got me a long way down the field relative to the submitter's basic question of saying that it doesn't fit in 16 the way 16 was constructed. I had empathy for the fact that in their country, nonetheless, this form of ownership is the highest form of ownership because they don't have freehold. But that's just what happens when you take an international standard and try to put it in a national setting. Obviously, freehold does exist in other countries. The international standard was written to compass freehold. And so, you know, if they were writing their own standard, they might call this PP&E because it is the highest form of ownership. But the basic question of the international standard, which is really encompassing a higher, if you want to call it pejoratively that, a different anyway form of ownership of freehold, and that's why the word tangible is in there, is to me why one thing perhaps the committee could say is that's a reason why that part doesn't work. It's a separate question, I think, how far the committee wants to go in then suggesting what the best way forward is. But I just didn't, to me, that the word tangible was important, and I just didn't see it referenced.
Bernd, then I'm going to ask a couple of questions.
Well, basically, I just wanted to express my sympathy for what Joanna said. I think as well we should stand firm to what we said before. We might take a little bit more diplomatic approach by adding what Scott said, because I think in essence you came to the same conclusion, but you did it, you expressed it a little bit more diplomatic without really wavering.
Certainly sounds better than pandering.
So, but in the end I think we should stick to our agenda decision. One minor drafting issue, usually we give a reason for not adding it to the agenda that corresponds to our criteria, and we don't do that. Because it says it's only a fact pattern specific to one, your jurisdiction, so we should add that this means that it's not widespread, because widespread is the criteria, or diversity, or whatever we think is the case here.
I thought we had kind of gone the other way, Burton, and said that if we believe that our decision is based on the analysis of the underlying accounting issues, which this one seemed to be, we don't need those other things. And
that means we're going back to the standard is clear?
No. I don't think we said that, and we're not saying it's a correction of an error. We're saying we did an analysis of the underlying accounting issue, and we reached a conclusion with regard to that issue. My personal view, and I think the view of the board and the trustees was, board members, please correct me if I'm wrong, that when we get asked a question, we ought to respond to it. And if we reach a decision based on our analysis, that ought to be the basis for our decision. So we shouldn't revert back to the agenda criteria in those circumstances, that the objective was to be helpful, even if it is jurisdiction specific. So I do think that that's the current view of the board and my understanding of the view of the trustees. Do board members have a reaction to that?
I think you are right. I just was wondering, in reading the draft of the agenda decision, whether this middle sentence, which says the committee identified characteristics of a lease in the fact pattern, should not be expanded to say how you, which made you conclude, because it's a statement of opinion, but it's not explained. And because of this question of who is the lessor, because in a lease you have a lessee, clearly the entity which has right to the land, and you have a lessor. And as Laurence pointed out, whether the lessor is the government or the original owner of the land is not that clear-cut in my mind. Whether the administration role by the government makes it automatically become a lessor, that I think is a difficult point to me, which needs to be a little bit explained.
Okay, let me break this question up into as many pieces as I need. As I say, the decision of the majority at the last meeting was that this was a lease in some sense, of a sort. Laurence has introduced the fact that, well, maybe the facts changed, and it's not obvious who the lessor is anymore. So that might change your view. Philippe had some of that too. Is there anyone else who would change from the decisions that we reached last time we talked about this, which was, in my recollection, that we identified the characteristics of a lease and we thought that was the appropriate accounting. Okay?
I would change to basically what Scott should suggest, and I would answer Laurence as well.
Anyone else? Okay, the majority view, the large majority view being that we're still in the camp of saying this has the characteristics of a lease. There was the proposal that we have to then change the word useful life to lease term. The second sentence of that paragraph talks about the fact that it could be indefinite. The fact that it's indefinite doesn't change the fact that it's a lease. Does anyone believe that we should add additional language that would go to whether or not the renewal rights are substantive, effective, whatever, or should we stay with the wording that we have here? Andrew?
Sorry, just coming back to your... No, I don't think we should change any of that, but just coming back to your point on the lease term, are you suggesting we do insert lease term instead of useful life? Because you depreciate assets which have useful lives. And the lease term is influential in getting to the useful life, but it's not actually the lease term you're depreciating, is it?
But we're not really amortizing the asset, we're amortizing the upfront payment.
Right.
And I think wouldn't we amortize that over the lease term? Question mark?
We would, but I would be with Andrew on this in that it then directs us to apply the subsequent accounting in 16,
okay,
which talks then in terms of useful life, but lease term would influence that.
John?
I wouldn't go on to address the issue of the renewals and the impact they have on useful life, because I think we would have another whole debate about the issue about who holds the renewal rights and versus the probabilities of renewal and so forth. And it seems to me that we're not going to, we've left this open enough that judgment is applied. That's appropriate in the context of the submission and what we were asked. But to me, there's a whole other day's debate on that issue.
Noted. All right, with those changes, does the staff have sufficient guidance? Does anyone object? Okay. That, I believe, ends our agenda for today, does it not?
Yes, it's on June 17th.
People have scheduled their days to call in and listen, so I propose that we adjourn for the day.